This is the Soccer Know My podcast, and on this episode, we're going to look at lower league football in the United States. John Panabaker, who created the American Pyramid blog, joins me. John, how are things?
Nice and warm.
Yes, so we talked before we started recording. You're based in Kansas City, so it's hot there, but you are nice and centrally located. Let's start off with maybe your background in soccer, you know, player, coach, writer, sort of how it all this come together.
Unfortunately, I never got to play soccer growing up. I had one season of opportunity at the local YMCA. I was fat and overweight and 13 years old and did not want to embarrass myself. So I decided to watch instead, and it just kept growing from there. I thought, well, this is really entertaining. Just kept watching it. It's more or less how it started for me. I was just a fan more than a player. Used to get Premier League playbacks on like an NBC channel. So the first actual Premier League game I watched was Aston Villa versus Manchester United. United won 3-0, but I really liked Villa's uniforms and their name. So I was kind of hooked in from there and never stopped.
So how did the blog come about?
Well, the blog came about a little bit differently. I've blogged off and on since I was probably 15 or 16. But, you know, just typical blogging about life. Last summer, I had spent some time actually working with Tim Singleton over at FC Fargo. Tried to help him out with some website work. Heard about what he was doing through the big soccer forums. Kind of looking at the lower level scene, I saw like there's nobody really digging into this. It's all pretty much the surface. You know, here's the big teams, you know, the Chattanoogas and Detroits of the world. I thought nobody's really going in and talking to the people who are down below that or to these state groups. And thought, well, I enjoy writing. I have a job that gives me the free time to be able to write. Figured I'll give it a shot. I'll email some people. And if no one's open and responsive to the idea, you know, it's not going to work out. But if they are, I'll see where it goes. And I've been doing that since, I think, October of last year now. So people have been pretty open to doing interviews, which is really nice. At the lower levels, I had no idea how that would go. I've noticed certain groups are a little bit more open than others, but you've got to learn things as you get into it, for sure.
Absolutely. The response has been really amazing. I mean, your interviews, you know, you interview front offices, supporter groups, and really give good insight into the hows and whys of a lot of these teams and groups. There's a lot of people with big dreams in this country, and your posts are engaging and well-written, so I encourage listeners to give those a read. What's been your favorite interview so far?
Is it all right if I go with, like, a couple of favorites?
Oh, absolutely.
Instead of just one? Yeah. Definitely in the top three for favorite interviews would probably be my one with Albuquerque Soul. I almost had the chance to interview Ron Patel live. For that, right as he responded to it, it turned out I was going to be in Albuquerque, Santa Fe for Thanksgiving. Just weren't quite able to make it work. But something about that interview, I don't know if it was just the combination of timing and the fact that it all came together while I was in New Mexico. That's definitely been one of my favorites. I think it was kind of neat, too, that when it came out, all that word went out, too. Like, hey, Albuquerque wants to go up. Albuquerque wants to go to USL. And I had to actually shoot him over an email. I'm like, hey, like, is this going to cause you trouble? And he's like, no, we appreciate any positive feedback we might hear about it from the league. But, hey, they already know what we want to do. So that was kind of neat. I would definitely say that the favorite one I've done has to be talking with Tim over at Chattanooga. That one was just a ton of fun. It was super open, and we almost feel like we more or less wrote a book on how to run a soccer team. If you go and read the end of that blog where he's got like his 8 points for starting a team.
Right.
And I know we had talked even after that, because there are a couple other projects I've bounced around in my head. And I've talked with a couple other blog writers about some of these ideas. just to try and come up with, you know, not just a hub of news for the lower level leagues in terms of maybe just one website that feeds you off into all these blogs, but even finding a way to get some of these guys we're interviewing all involved to come up with maybe just like a PDF manual, like, hey, you want to start a team? Here's some advice from the guys who have done it, and they've done it really well. So if you want to do it well, read this. So that's a project I've talked with a couple of people about. Been on the back burner a little bit. Work has been crazy, but it's still out there.
Okay. So a theme of your interviews seems to be people seeing a need and filling it. Louisiana comes to mind, and you've covered a lot of ground, both geographically and philosophically. You know, you've talked to people from Little Rock, Mobile, Dayton, a bunch of teams on the West Coast, Fargo, South Dakota, Hawaii. Thought your post on one league for fourth divisions for the fourth division was quite interesting. You compared entry fees, stability, and regional focus. So share with listeners about what you found.
So this is where I'm worried the interview goes off the rails. This is probably the question I've thought the most about. Because I've talked to a lot of people in a lot of leagues, or guys who just aren't in leagues, like Blackbird United out in Mississippi. What I've found is it seems like each league has some type of a different focus at a higher level. You know, like when I look at it, the Premier Development League, they seem to have just a really big emphasis on, you know, hey, we want to be the league that creates the players who go on to MLS. That really seems to be their goal. Then you go to somebody like the National Premier Soccer League. They really seem more interested in like, hey, let's make sure every community has a team, put it in place, and you can get the support. We want you to have a team. It seems to really be their goal. When I look at the Premier League of America, they really seem to want to appeal to that same type of, you know, soccer for every community, while also making it easy for some of these really old clubs, like Carpathia out in Michigan, who haven't been able to afford going up to a higher league. They really want to make that incredibly cost effective. So instead of one team in one city, you can actually have two or three teams in one city, each playing in a different neighborhood. Reduce travel, make the entry cost really low so you can focus on putting it in the other areas that your team needs it the most.
Well, again, the post is called One League to Rule Them All, and you lay out sort of the facts, and then at the end you do some pros and cons. Why don't you touch on those real quick?
Well, I think the pros and cons are really going to be something that affects an ownership group in particular when it comes to looking into a league. I am all for making things as cost effective and as easy to do, you know, a low barrier for entry as possible, which is why I'm a really big fan of the PLA and what they're doing, and I've interviewed several of their teams. I really think that when it comes to a pro and con, you've got to consider the cost. And that's what I don't think a lot of these guys, until the last couple of years, have really started to do. It's very expensive to run a team. And that's what I've really tried to dig into in a lot of these newer interviews, like the one with FC Buffalo from this week. We really dug into that, where all these people are, you know, like, well, it's just, you know, it's money. And it's like, yeah, but it takes a lot more money than you think, and a lot more than just money to get things done. I would really prefer if every league tried to find a way to make the barrier for entry as low as possible, did a better job of providing support to the new guys coming on, sharing, you know, best practice. You see that, but it's typically very informal rather than like, hey, here's a manual of best practice, which is kind of what that one project I was telling you would be. It's like, hey, here's a manual. Here's some of the best minds in the business. Here's their advice for you. Download this PDF. Go forth and prosper. I really feel like, too, when it comes to the pros and cons, you've got to figure out which league is really looking out for your team's best interest. And that's the really important thing with these leagues. I mean, I'm not going to make a judgment call on this league doesn't care about you.
Right. So you compare, you know, the NPSL, the PDL, and the PLA. I was really, you know, focusing on costs. I was really surprised to learn about the entry fee for the PDL. $75,000. That seems like a huge chunk of change for, you know, people who, you know, college students or, you know, people trying to break through. And, you know, and it, that just seemed like a lot. You also focused on stability. You know, obviously the NPSL seems to be in a growth mode, whereas PDL seems to be more stable, and the PLA is more regionally focused. It's really interesting. You know, the player development aspect, I guess, is another thing that you touched on. It's just really interesting to see how these leagues all function in sort of growing the base of the pyramid, sort of funneling those players to MLS and beyond. Anyway, I just really encourage listeners to read this piece. He presents a lot of information, and it really gives you a sense of what's happening at, you know, the fourth division is, you know, technically unofficial, but, you know, there's this fourth, fifth division thing in America growing. And if you want to read about sort of what's happening down there, I really encourage you to read his post, One League to Rule Them All. So let's move on to, I guess, the pyramid itself. Another post that you wrote was called Explaining the Pyramid, which I thought was one of the best pieces I've read, comparing to, you know, United States to, say, England, the rest of the world, and you made a baseball comparison. Talk about what you've learned about, you know, the U.S. soccer structure through that post and talking to all these people. And maybe what's the future for this for soccer in this country? Oh.
What is the future for soccer in this country? Man, easy answer for that is I think it's going to be what we make it. That's really what I've started to understand with this. And one of the big things that does frustrate me is, you know, having to hear these guys talk about their ambition and knowing it's not easily attainable, and they know it. And there's something really sad about that. You know, where you have a guy who's like, let's talk about Little Rock, for example. There's a guy who works full time, who has started a team, who wants to really build something, but he's got a cap on how much he can build it. There's something so fundamentally wrong and un-American about that, to put limits on what you can do with your own hard work, that I just don't understand about how the system works here. My real hope would be, and I've put a lot of thought into this question, and I've debated writing a blog post about it, but at this point I'm thinking, you know, writing another blog post about this is just white noise. I really think we've been looking at the structure the wrong way. You know, everybody wants to talk about building the pyramid from the top down. It doesn't really work, because when you put the top piece in place, it drops straight to the ground because there's nothing underneath it. What I would hope to see is a certain amount of laying aside of ego. That's one surprising thing I've really found, is there's a lot of, not necessarily intentional, but there's a lot of ego going on between the leagues. It's definitely a type of power struggle where people are helping each other, but at the same time, the higher up in the league structure you go, the more it's like, I'm going to protect me and mine. I'm going to protect my turf. What I would hope to see to really start growing the game would be to start at the ground up with these teams. One of the things I've been thinking about since last fall, really when I started this, was the story of the Great Lakes Premier League and Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor, because I don't know how many people know this story, but Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor tried to join the National Premier Soccer League and were told, you don't have enough financial backing, go get your ducks in a row and, you know, maybe come back to us next year. So these guys decide, you know, well, that doesn't quite seem fair, so we're going to start our own league. So they start the Great Lakes Premier League. It's just five teams, but it goes really well. You know, Grand Rapids had, what, like 4,500 fans a game?
Right.
I think Ann Arbor was like 1,100. Then they go into their off season, like, you know, hey, this is going really well. We got some expansion teams. They'd already announced one to get to six. It was great. And then all of a sudden, Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor are gone. MPSL has come in like, hey, we want you now. You know, it's like after this league gets formed, then the next league comes in. It's like, hey, we're gonna take your best, kind of poach it away. And I remember thinking, well, crap, there goes the Great Lakes Premier League, who managed to rebound spectacularly. They're up to 12 teams. You know, in my interview with Oakland County, one of the guys, Ben, is actually on the expansion committee and is like, hey, we're already planning for next year. So that league's just blown up. But I remember looking at that situation and thinking, what a chance was missed here. You know, the Great Lakes Premier League was turning into what looked like to be a really solid regional league. You know, the MPSL's really put an emphasis on that Midwestern region and the Rust Belt. I remember thinking in my mind, wouldn't it be great if like these guys can get to like eight teams, and then the MPSL is like, hey, why don't we actually do promotion relegation from your regional league up to our national conference for this area? I mean, wouldn't that be sweet? Like, you could actually start it from the bottom, you know, show that it works, give people a chance to see how exciting it could be, even if it's at a low level, just to show how it would work, and just a missed opportunity. I think that's one of the big stories I've seen too, is there's just a lot of missing or missed opportunity for leagues and teams to really work together to create something that's incredibly special. So I think that's where the future is going to be, it's going to be people working together to make something really special and just building it up from the ground to the top. You know, they're going to have to work together to create critical mass, and that's going to be the future. It's people working together to create that critical mass.
You've touched on regional leagues several times, I guess, in case listeners aren't aware. So, you know, there's NPSL and PDL. They're the fourth division. But there is, like you say, this movement of regional leagues. Why don't you talk about different regions that have these leagues, what they're called, sort of how they work?
Well, I do know there's a few I've interviewed. There's a few I haven't. The Louisiana Premier League, for one, that's a league I interviewed. I think I want to say six teams in Louisiana and one in Biloxi, Mississippi. I wouldn't say rumors. I've interviewed a couple of these people, so I'd say it's more than rumor. It's something that's being actively worked on to create a Gulf Coast League to actually provide a higher level of competition for teams from, you know, Pensacola over to Louisiana. Because there's a huge gap there that nobody is really filling, unless you look at New Orleans Jesters, and then you have to go all the way to Birmingham, Alabama to find somebody else if you're in the MPSL. If you look at the PDL, it's just, I think, Mississippi Brilla. So it's like three teams
right
at a high level for that entire stretch. So that's something that may or may not come into being. I know it's being talked about. You've got the... I hope I get this right. The American Premier Soccer League in Florida. That's where Boca Raton FC is from. They're going to be playing in the Open Cup on Wednesday. I think that's about 10 teams strictly in Florida right now. I'm not sure if they have any plans to go beyond. Tried reaching out to a couple of teams from there and just haven't heard anything back as of now, of course. After that, I know you got the Texas Premier League. I think that's another league with about 10 teams. Then you go over and you've got the United Premier Soccer League out of California that now has teams in California, Arizona, Nevada. And I'm pretty sure this is a first for any level of elite men's amateur soccer, a team in Idaho.
Okay.
So those guys are really taking off, and I'm actually in the middle of working on an interview with their commissioner right now, so that'll be fun to read. I'm asking him about all that kind of stuff. Then you got the Evergreen Premier League up in Washington. That's eight teams right now, and they started their own women's league that I think is up to 10 teams. So they got more women's league teams out in Washington than they do men's at an adult level, which is really interesting to think about. Then you have to go start heading east again. You've got the American Premier League, which is in that's based out of Minnesota. I think last I checked, they have four teams in Minnesota, one in Fargo, North Dakota, and one in Wisconsin. And one of their main goals is actually to kind of start pushing out west into like the Dakotas and Montana, start making it easier for those teams to actually, or those cities, sorry, to actually have high-level men's teams that can showcase their talent. Actually did an interview with another team in North Dakota yesterday talking about just that. He said the soccer scene here is crazy up until you finish high school. And he's like, and then it just falls off. So again, he's like, we see a need, we're working to fill it. Talent all over the place, it's a matter of giving them an outlet, of having someone who's actually going to take the time to create a structure for teams to play in. There's a lot of people working on just that. Could probably still use some more, but
right.
It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And those are both things that I feel like all the people who want to do it don't have enough of. I have plenty of dreams for what I would do because, you know, I'm in Kansas City and people love soccer and they love being parts of their neighborhoods and their communities. And I look at that and I think, oh, you could harness so much potential here, but I have neither the time nor the resources to look into making something like that. But if there's anybody from Kansas City listening to this, let's get together, share some beers, let's start dreaming.
Absolutely. So, you know, you've spent a lot of time, you know, diving into lower league football. Why don't you highlight some resources, either, you know, blogs or podcasts or Twitter feeds or anything like that that listeners can use to find out more about these lower leagues?
Well, a lot of that is just going to be critical mass. Most of the time when I hear about some of these teams I interview, it's because I just follow everyone when it comes to Twitter. This team I interviewed in North Dakota, I heard about them because I follow FC Fargo, which led me to follow their Twitter feed for the North Dakota Cup, who just randomly tweeted about this other team. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll give them a shout out, see if they want to interview. It's really more like just following the white rabbit down the hole. That's why I really want to work with people to see if we can create a hub for this kind of information, because right now it is very time consuming. I spend a lot more time on Twitter than I want just to figure out what's going on, because you have to get your news from so many different sources.
Right.
Just a lot of people on the ground spreading stuff around. You know, I might hear about one guy from just a random dude who's a Detroit City fan who's like, hey, I heard about this is fun, you should check it out. And I wind up wandering down that rabbit hole. Maybe it helps that I'm in sales. You know, I've learned to have more like a bloodhound instinct to really go after, like, oh, I need to go here, and this leads me here, and this leads me here. But you really just have to put your ear to the ground when it comes to finding this stuff. There are a lot of good resources that cover areas. Like I think it's I think the blog is called Soccer Nation. They really cover like the San Diego soccer scene really well. So if you follow like Albion Pros or North County Battalion, you hear about these guys a lot, and they do a really good job of covering that area. But there's no real one solid resource you can go to. I mean, you can't even really go to like the NPSL website and get a solid breakdown of what's going on. I mean, there's so much going on, and they're also in the middle of redoing their whole entire website. So it's they're getting that finished, and then hopefully that'll improve. But right now if you want to know what's going on, you just got to put your ear to the ground and just chase the rabbit down every hole if you've got the time.
Right. I know that you're trying to create, like you said, a small network. You know, there's Non-League America, there's For the Love of Football, there's, you know, obviously you at American Pyramid. For instance, here in Atlanta, so the Silverbacks are now playing in the NPSL, so Paul Scanling, who does the Gorilla Talk podcast, he just kept it going, and, you know, he interviewed Reading United ahead of the U.S. Open Cup game. You know, he just instead of interviewing Carolina Railhawks, he just finds the next, you know, Georgia Revolution or whoever they're playing. And it's just, you know, grassroots, ground level, just like you said, just start asking people and see if they'll talk. And if they do, great. And, you know, build, like you said, build this critical mass. You're also putting out a newsletter, so I want to make sure you have a chance to talk about that real quick.
I do have a newsletter. That may have just been nixed this past week. For whatever for whatever reason, I find it easier to just write a blog post for it now instead of doing the email. But if you do sign up for it, I'm working on some special perks for people. Typically what I do is I put out my interviews on Thursday, but I put them out when no one's looking, and then I actually wait to tell people it's out. So what I'll probably start doing is if you sign up for the newsletter, you'll be the first to know when interviews come out, so you can read it before everybody else even knows. So that's going to be one advantage for it. I'm thinking about doing a couple of other things too that might be just to give people some fun stuff to really keep connected and know exactly what's going on. You know, maybe let people into the ground floor on something like a major hub or some type of PDF, you know, based on Tim Kelly's, you know, eight steps for a successful team is how I like to view them. But
okay, that sounds good. Yeah. Finally, you ask your guests what their favorite book or soccer, you know, soccer or otherwise is, and who their favorite player is. So let's turn the tables and ask you.
Well, let's start with players because I've got a ton of books. See, the problem is I really didn't get into soccer until the mid-2000s, so my past players are really, really limited. More to like what I've seen in YouTube clips. So I'm going to have to go really new school.
No, that's great because, you know, this podcast is very fan driven. You know, for instance, I interviewed the Atlanta Liverpool group, and one guy started following like 2013. So he totally understands that, you know, I mean, he doesn't know Kenny Dalglish and Kevin Keegan and all, you know, Robbie Fowler, but he just, you know, Steven Gerrard and, you know, Luis Suarez, and that's it. But just jump in where you started following.
Gosh. I'd have to go with my current favorite to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where I'll start. I am a huge Zlatan Ibrahimovic fan. I don't know what it is. I am not like a super cocky guy in real life, but there's something about guys with swagger like that. You know, a Zlatan Ibrahimovic in soccer, or, you know, what? How Robert Downey Jr. plays Tony Stark in Iron Man. There's something about those guys who just have that character that just draws me in. Uh-huh. Where it's like, I know how good I am, and you should know how good I am too. And if you don't, I'm going to make sure you know. There's just something about that that draws me in, and it helps he's just insanely skillful and does stupid things with the ball. Like that bicycle kick against England, what was it, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Scored a bicycle kick goal from like 40 yards out. No one tries that ever. It was amazing. That's still probably the best goal I've ever seen. Now, okay, I think I've got my past player though.
Okay.
Probably, and this might be a little bit different, I'm going to go with Alessandro Del Piero.
Oh yeah. ADP.
Yep. I actually really got to follow him once he left Serie A and went to the Hyundai A-League. It's for whatever reason, I enjoy the A-League far more than I probably should. So I got to see all kinds of highlights of him. There was just something about the way he ran around. And I think it was even like the way he wore his socks. He had like short socks or something. It just didn't quite look right, but he would just do silly things with the ball that would just make people look foolish. That was amazing.
Yeah, Del Piero, you know, when I first started following the game in the mid-90s, you know, he was with Juventus, and they made the three Champions Leagues in a row, and, you know, he was scoring all these free kicks, and they built the team around him, and, you know, then he got hurt, and then he came back, and then they hit Calciopoli, and he stayed, and, you know, his ending at Juventus wasn't awesome, but, you know, he was an amazing servant for that club, and, you know, I'm glad he got a couple of years in Australia.
And no offense, but I would say favorite former player, just because he's nowhere near what he once was, Andrea Pirlo. I mean, I know he's still playing, but come on. Compared to the Euros a couple of years ago, you know, I remember the 2012 Euro, and he was just destroying people. And now you've moved 4 years down the road, and it's like it's a shadow. So, like, you know, there's some people like, it's the same guy. I'm like, same guy, but, you know, like, not the same player.
Right.
Not the same at all.
Right. Let's finish with a couple books real quick.
Well, I brought five. I know it's a lot, but these are books I feel are very important. And some of these are, you know, if you listen to this and you're considering starting a team, because I've got a ton of people reading my blog who are considering starting teams, these are books that I think are essential for people to read if they want to do this. First one would actually be Leading by Alex Ferguson. I got that book for Christmas. I think I read it in 2 weeks. I hated Alex Ferguson in the mid-2000s because I was a Villa fan, and Martin O'Neill just could not crack the top four because of these guys. So now I've learned to appreciate him now that I've moved out of the teenage hormonal stage, and I can appreciate people for what they are. But that book is phenomenal. A book I got right after Thanksgiving was actually 31 to Nil. And that's by, I doubt I'll get this last name right, but James Montague. It's just his journey going around the world in World Cup qualifying for teams like Kosovo, Pakistan, and American Samoa. So he's actually at the game where American Samoa wins their first ever game, like 2-1. And it's a completely story-based. So he goes into how the goalie for American Samoa was in that 31-0 game with Australia, just how it almost broke this guy physically and emotionally, and that he's the goalie who's in goal when they win their first ever game, and just the complete change that the whole team undergoes. It's amazing getting to hear some of these stories, especially when he's talking about having secret meetings with Kosovo when they're trying to get made a UEFA member for the first time, and then it just happens this week. That's really cool to be able to see how this stuff has happened. Another really good one is Inverting the Pyramid by Jonathan Wilson. Fair warning, incredibly dense.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. So dense. But if you really like soccer, it's a beautiful density. And it's fascinating to learn where all this stuff comes from. But if you're looking for an easy read on the level of like 31 nil, don't read this book. Just stay away from it. You will not enjoy it. And then another one is Das Reboot by Raphael Honigstein. That's just the story of how German soccer went from their disastrous period in the early 2000s to winning the World Cup in 2014. So, this is interviews with like Jurgen Klinsmann, Uli Hone, I think it's Uli Hoeneß. Does that sound right?
Uli Hoeneß, yeah.
Yeah, that last name, man. I'm learning German and I can't figure that name out. But he's in there, and then they just talk to all these other guys. It just explains the structure of how they're going about finding players. And if you're starting a team and you're in an area, there will be great advice for how to go about and find these guys to make sure you're actually building your team from people within your area. And then the book I just finished, and I actually recommended this to the guys in charge of the PLA and said, you should make everyone who wants to start a team who sends you an expansion info read this book. It's Money and Soccer, a Soccernomics Guide by Stefan Szymanski. Again, incredibly dense. This is literally a manual for the financials of running a soccer team. Talks about debt, talks about stadiums, selling players. I enjoyed it far more than I probably should have. If I ever start a team, I know how to do it.
All right, those are all great choices. So let's wrap up with how listeners can find your material and find you on social media.
Good thing is I'm really easy to find on social media. So on Facebook, we're just Facebook/American Pyramid. Might have to do a little bit of digging. I'm not sure. The Facebook page is far less popular than the Twitter feed. The Twitter feed is @pyramid_blog. Yeah, so @pyramid_blog, because someone already took American Pyramid. Website for the blog, and this should actually be live by June, but for the time being, it's just AmericanPyramid.weebly.com. So hopefully by the start of June, it's just going to be AmericanPyramid.com. But for the time being, that's how you can find the website.
Fantastic. All that will be in the show notes. So you can find American Pyramid and all these great articles. Again, my guest today has been John Panabaker from American Pyramid Blog. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've really learned a lot talking to you and reading your posts. So again, I can't encourage listeners enough that if you want to learn about what's going on, below USL, what's going on in fourth, fifth divisions, these sort of unofficial, these regional, these the amateur aspects of American soccer. I can't encourage you enough to check out these posts, find out what front offices are doing, find out what supporters are doing, find out how the game is growing in the United States. John, I just want to thank you for taking some time out today and chatting to me, and all the best.
Yeah, thanks for your time. We'll do part two sometime.
Okay. Thanks for listening to the Soccer Nomad podcast. Let me know what you think by commenting on the Podomatic page or giving the show a review and rating on iTunes. And help me spread the word by sharing this podcast with a fellow soccer fan. You can follow me on Twitter at AustinLong1974, and please visit my blog, soccernomad.wordpress.com, for posts on kits, memories, and more. Thanks again.